Okay, am I on now, Brad? Okay. Oh, they got it under control there. All right. No playing in the camera or the light, so why don't you move over that way? That's not going to work. I remember you from last time. That's it. Delson, you keep guard of it. Can you see from over there? Okay. Yeah. All right, Brad, I guess I'm ready whenever. Oh, I've been on? Okay. Some of you were here before when we talked about being a kid in Jesus' time. And some of you may have been here when we talked about Jesus' birth. I had something that I've been thinking about that I want to share with this large group of young people we have here, as well as with the rest of the congregation. Because I got thinking about the feast. I've been thinking about the Feast of Tabernacles. I know that's several months away now, but it's already on my mind. It's already on my mind to think about the praising God that goes on at the feast days. And I was thinking about tomorrow being a feast day and today being a Sabbath day. And I started thinking about the differences between going to in English, we say going to church on the Sabbath and going to a festival. And I started thinking more and more about what makes that different. And I'm not going to cover all that today because I'm only going to cover the church part and just give a little bit of a taste of why this is on my mind about the festival. And then tomorrow, we'll finish the story. If any of you are going to be there tomorrow at Pleasant Hills, I will finish the story and we'll talk about the festivals. And what the difference was. What the difference was between what they did every week back then, I'm talking about in past times and still today. What Jesus did, for instance, what he did every week growing up. Every week, going to the synagogue. And what was different about going to the temple in Jerusalem on the feast day. We're not going to talk about the temple in Jerusalem on the feast day today. But what I want to think about, and some of this we just have to fill in. You've got to read between the lines because we don't have a lot of information. There's some history about it, but there's not a whole lot. Nobody sat down and wrote out everything that happened in a synagogue in Jesus' time. But we have some historical records. So this is the title. What was it like to go to church? We say in English, we say we're going to church. Did we actually go to church? What do you think? Where are you? Where are you right now? Yes. You're in what? I'm sorry? You're in a college. So you came to a college today. You came to a classroom today. Did you also come to church today? Okay. Andrew says yes. So you came to church, but you also came to a classroom. Now, your parents understand this. But before I get away from this picture, when Jesus went to church or synagogue in his day, did it look like that? No, that was a quick no. Why not? Why didn't it look like that?
All the crosses, I guess.
The crosses, they didn't have crosses on a synagogue, of course. That's just some church. Actually, is it a church around here? Anybody recognize that? Is that over your way? No? Yes? Anybody recognize that church? No, I was looking at you. I just lifted it from the internet, but I think it's one that's supposed to be in Lancaster or somewhere. Or that area. Here's that would look familiar. I don't know. A church? I don't know. I don't recognize it, but it's from around here somewhere. When we say church, you talk to your friends in the neighborhood and they go to church. They go to a building, right? They go to a place like that and they call it a church. We come to a classroom. We call it a church. the Bible is written, is translated into English. It has the word church there. What is a church? Well, we tend to think of it as a building like that, or maybe a denomination. In my church, we do this. That means all of our groups of churches together. We go to the feast. Or maybe in your neighbor's church, we do Christmas. That's what our denomination does. So they do something as a group. Our group does something. That's the way we use the word church. But in the Bible, the word, who can tell me what the word is in New Testament for church? Ecclesia, which means?
Assembly, called out.
Okay. It's an assembly. The word ecclesia, the word that's translated church in the Bible, just means a group of people that are called together to do something for a reason, to have a meeting. So you've given an announcement, says there's going to be a meeting at Central Penn in this classroom on Saturday at 2:30. That makes it a church because it's a meeting that's been called. It's an assembly. So that's what that word means. It's very simple. It's very simple. In fact, if we turn to Acts chapter 19, if you turn to Acts chapter 19, I'm not going to have it up on the board for you, on the slide. We'll see something that might surprise you. Acts 19, 30, I think verse 32. If I can read in the dark. Now in Acts 19 we have Paul. All right, and Paul is in, what city is he in Acts 19? I forgot. Anybody remember? He's in Ephesus, okay. He's in Ephesus, and there's a trouble. There's trouble because they don't like what he's preaching. They're upset with him. And in verse 32, it says, "Some therefore cried one thing." This whole group of people, they were getting all upset. "Some said one thing, some said another." I can find where it was again. "The assembly was confused. And so one part didn't know why they even worked together." It's called an assembly. That's the same word that elsewhere in the New Testament is translated church. It just means this group that was in Ephesus. They came to like the town square. And that's where they had meetings. And when they wanted to decide something important, that's where they went and had a meeting. That word is called assembly. It's the same word as translated church. So church is a group of people. The word we call church, it's a group of people that come together for something. That word's used three times. Verse 39. Verse 39, the same chapter. "But if you inquire anything concerning other matters, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly." So somebody says in charge, he comes up, he says, "Look, if we got to deal with this later, we'll call an assembly together. And we'll meet right here, and we'll talk about it." That's what the word was. Verse 41, it says again. "And when he had spoken, he dismissed the assembly." Okay, so he told them they could go. So that's the same word that's translated church. So church isn't really a building. That's the way we use it now. It does mean a building in English now. But in the Bible, when you see the word church, it's talking about a group of people that come together for a particular reason. And we have a reason why we come together. Why do we come together on the Sabbath? Anybody? Oh, okay, Leah first. Talk about the Bible. That's one of the reasons. We called together for a reason. Did you have another, Andrew? Did you have another reason?
I was going to say
talk about God. Talk about the Bible. Yes. You had.
Jesus.
Okay. All those are right answers.
Fellowship.
Well, you got to use that as a noun somehow, or this man here gets perturbed. For the fellowship. There we go. Yes. I'm kidding. I don't know if you were here the week he was talking about fellowship being a noun and not a verb. Yes, absolutely. We come to see each other and to share. Sharing is fellowship. Okay, any other reasons? Why are we called? What's the reason why we come together? Have they covered them all? We're told to. That's a good one. Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together as a manner of some is. So, we have all these reasons why we come together. That makes us an assembly, or as the word is translated into English, a church. In Jesus' time, they didn't go to church. They didn't go to a church that looked like that. Didn't have a steeple, didn't have a cross, wasn't shaped like that or anything. That's not the kind of building that he went to on a Sabbath. At all. But what did he do on the Sabbath? What do you think Jesus did on the Sabbath? Oh, okay, Leah first. He did the same things we do. Talk to people about the Bible. Yes. What else did he do? You could invite people over. Is that what you said? I don't hear too well. So, yes. Where did he? Did they go to any place together, like what we do? They went to a place called a synagogue in Jesus' time. It's kind of like what we call a church now. That's a picture of a synagogue in a place called Capernaum. That's not, that building does not exist now. Parts of it do. Yes. That's a long story that I'm not going to cover now, but this synagogue was Jewish. The church became a Christian thing, and there was a difference. The Judaism in general, the Jewish people and the Christians, got at the beginning, Christians were Jewish. All Jewish. And they kept going to synagogue, but eventually they weren't welcome in the synagogue, and they started doing their own thing. And over time, things stopped looking like this and started looking like that. It took a long time. Didn't happen overnight. But it's a long story. We'll talk about it sometime. So this is an artist's idea of what the synagogue at Capernaum looked like when it was standing. Anybody know where Capernaum is? Anybody remember where Capernaum is? We've talked about it before. What part of the world is it in? The Middle East, you know that. It's on the northwestern shore of? Huh? Yeah, Sea of Galilee. It's right on the Sea of Galilee. Who lived there? Who? Galileans. Who lived in Capernaum? Anybody we know? Huh? Who? He lived there. That's not where he was from, but he moved there. Why did he go there? It had a beach. That's all it takes for money. It had a beach. It does. I got a picture. Well, Peter lived. Peter's mother, I think, lived in Capernaum. He's from Capernaum. Capernaum was right on the shore of the sea. What did the people who lived there, many of the people who lived there, did what for a job? Fishermen. You've heard that. You heard it in the Bible stories. They were fishermen. John, James, and Peter, and Andrew. They were all fishermen. Because they're right there on I got a slide. There we go. Right there on the shore. This is the town of Capernaum's right here. Or was. And they were right on the water. So they did a lot of fishing. Okay? Get back to where it was. And because Galilee, by the time of Jesus' time, there were a lot of Jews who lived in Galilee. Hundreds of years before this, and you may not know this, but Galilee was Gentile. Galilee was Gentile. And the early form of whatever you want to call the settlers there in Palestine right now, you know, they go and they settle in a territory and it kind of adds to Israel's territory. They think that that's what they're doing. That was going on back in the hundreds of years before Jesus' time. After the Maccabees, people started moving. The Jews started moving up into Galilee. They were down in the area of Jerusalem. They started moving up toward Galilee. And they started settling the towns like Nazareth and Sepphora all those towns up there. Capernaum. By the way, Petra, Gary talked to us about Sepphora, the guests that are at our house right now, who didn't come here today, be there tomorrow. The young lady has done some excavating at Sepphora. She was part of a group that was doing some research at Sepphora. So, we have a synagogue. This is the kind of place that Jesus went to. In fact, I think if we turn to John 6, if you have your Bibles, turn to John 6. He didn't just go to synagogues like this. He went to this one. John 6. This is in John 6 is where he's talking about being the bread of life. And people didn't understand that. You got to eat the bread, drink the blood. And it was really messing with their minds a little bit. I know you can stay away from there. And so he had a lot. Watch the cords, please. Just lift over top of them. He had a lot to say in this chapter. And then if we read verse 59, These things he said in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Okay? So it's telling us right there that Jesus taught in this building, or building that was like this, in Capernaum. And that tells us a few things about that we'll get into in a little bit. It tells us a lot in that one little spot. This was the biggest, if not the biggest building, it was the building that stood out the most in Capernaum. If you came up to Capernaum, this is the building you would see. They tried to build the synagogues a little bit taller, a little bit bigger than all the other buildings in town, if they could, if the Romans would let them. This synagogue, according to the records, and according to the excavation, which I'll show you in a minute, was made of white limestone. It had wonderful, it had a lot of detail. You might not be able to tell from this picture. This particular, the ruins that we have are from hundreds of years after Jesus. The original synagogue that was there, that might have been right underneath of it, is that we no longer have any access to that. But it may have been built on the same site. What's there now? Oh, I won't get to that. Sorry. First, let's talk about synagogue. There's, see that word? Synagogue? Nowadays, see, that's a synagogue. That one is it Poland, I think? I wrote it somewhere. I don't know. But we call that a synagogue. It's a building, just like we call a church. But you know what the word means? It's the same word. It's the same kind of word. Assembly, a group of people called together for a reason. It means basically the same thing. Synagogue means basically the same thing as assembly. It's a group of people called together for a reason to have a meeting. Okay? It's the building, it's the kind of building that they built to go somewhere on the Sabbath and meet together, talk about God, talk about Jesus, talk about the Bible, and do some other things that we'll talk about. That's what a synagogue was. So this synagogue is in Capernaum. You know, it's not that fancy, is it? It doesn't look like, you know, it's. But what do you notice about it? It's elegant. It just has a, you know, certain shape to it. Can you tell from the picture, like, what that is? Yeah, it's like a courtyard, a porch or something. It's open there. It's open there. Now you got stairs going up and you enter. Some people thought it had a second floor. Now they don't think it had a second floor. It's hard to tell. Hard to tell. All right? So what's there now? Well, what's there now? This is the city of Capernaum. You see the modern road. If you were going to tour a bus, you'd have to come down there. And here's the Sea of Galilee. This is looking north. You see all kinds of, I don't know what they, some kind of, whether they're fig trees or grapes or what they are, something planted there. See that? That's the old synagogue. That's what's left of the old synagogue at Capernaum. It's still there. Now, it didn't look like that. They had to rebuild. The pieces were there. Yes? People still live? There, well, that's a museum there. I don't remember what that is. I think there's a church there. There are people that live around there. There is still a town. I think it's over here somewhere. But this is more of a historical area right there. Now, that's not your kind of beach, though, I don't think, is it? It looks like rocks to me. It looks like some of those French beaches that I actually see people lying on the beaches, but it's pebbles, it's big pebbles they lie on. I've never been there. But it looks pretty. I'd like to go someday. So, there it is. It's still there. You can go look at it today. That's the synagogue in Capernaum. That's what's left of it. There's a close-up of it. So, if you look back at that picture, I don't know whether I have it in here again. Well, I do. Here we go. Not yet. But remember, there's the steps. There's the doors. You got a window up here. These would be houses next to the synagogue. That's where houses were. Very small. Remember we were talking about houses in Jesus' time? And they're just real little things? Remember? We laid one out, 15 by 15. There they are. Lots of little houses. Little houses. The synagogue was a big and pretty building in the middle of all these houses. Had columns for holding up maybe a floor or something, I don't know. And it's white limestone, which in that area stood out. Look here. See? It's kind of brown. You had a white building. It really stood out. It was pretty. It was pretty. And they made it pretty on purpose. So that's what it looks like, because they rebuilt it. Now, let me read you a little bit about it. This is among the oldest synagogues in the world. Now, they say it has four parts. It has a praying hall, which I guess is this. A praying hall. A western patio. This is the west, so I'm not really sure. This is east, right? The way it... The tall part's on the left. The west would be that way. I don't know. Unless Capernaum's, you know, I don't know how the shoreline goes there. Anyway, it does have this, maybe they're calling this the patio. I don't. Maybe east and west I'm mixed up. I'm not sure. It's got a southern balustrade, and that would mean these types of things they would call a balustrade. And a small room at the northwest of the building that I can't make out on here. The southern face is toward Jerusalem. This was so that when you sat in there, it was typical when they made a synagogue, they made it so when you sat in the when you walked in the synagogue, you were facing Jerusalem. Why would you want to face Jerusalem? Holy city, what's there? What was in Jerusalem? The temple was there. And the synagogue was kind of like a poor cousin or whatever of the temple. You lived way up in Galilee. You couldn't go to the temple every day. It was too far. I mean, every Sabbath is too far away. So you had a synagogue in town. And Nazareth had a synagogue. And Sephora had all these places had synagogues. And that's where you went. But when you were there, you were thinking about Jerusalem and the temple. Because that's where the sacrifices were. That's where the morning sacrifice, the evening sacrifice, that's where the history was. Okay? So when you went in there, they tried to make them face in a certain direction so that when you were in a synagogue, you were facing Jerusalem. That, you know, God didn't say do this one way or the other. It's just what people did to remind themselves of Jerusalem and of the temple. This particular synagogue appears to have been built probably in the 300s to 400s. You know, hundreds of years after Jesus. Probably built right on top of the old one that was destroyed before that, or fell down, whichever happened. There are inscriptions that we can still see today, and this wouldn't surprise you. We do it in this country, and you see it all over the world. When I go to Asia, you see it. But there are inscriptions. What do you think the inscriptions, what kind of inscriptions would you see on a synagogue? What kind of notice would you see in Greek and Aramaic? What kind of things did they write on the bricks, on buildings? In the church where you work, they probably have it. Well, what else? I mean, like on some wall somewhere. Well, they could have Ten Commandments. I'm looking for something a little more mundane. When it was built, but I'm looking for something else. Nobody's thinking about this. Who built it? That's kind of what I'm looking for. Who gave the money to build it? The people that gave money, you ever go to a church or a school. I think the one over there that we rent in, where did we go? Mechanicsburg? Doesn't it have a wall as you walk in that says who all the big contributors? You go to any temple in Thailand, one I'll go to is like a big long step. It's probably 1,000 steps. All the way up there, each step's got a little plaque. Yeah, who bought that step? Who paid for that step? Well, they did the same thing back then. The big contributors have their names. And they do that. That was typical in a synagogue. A lot of times it was a Gentile that was friendly to the Jews. And some of those people were instrumental at times in Jesus' work and Paul's work. You know, people that had some means, some money, that could help ministries. And people were maybe not full proselytes. They didn't become Jews. They didn't become circumcised and all. But they would be friendly to the Jews in town for whatever their reason. And they would contribute to the building of a synagogue. And they'd get their name on there. Now, what is different about a synagogue? Well, you see, there's all these stones, and we'll see later how it looked when they got there. They knew these weren't the ruins of somebody's house, because here's what the stones look like. They had all this carved detail in there. That took a lot of work, cost a lot of money, because you had to carve this Star of David, they call it. You could carve that into the stone and carve all these little dentils and all these designs. This is what's it called? I can't think of it right now. There's a dart, egg and dart trim. They got molding that looks like that. They're, all this stuff, it's very, very expensive because it takes a lot of work to do. This is stone. This is limestone. They got to get in and chop, 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 chop. All right? So they knew this wasn't just somebody's house or somebody's shed. When they saw this kind of stuff laying there on the ground, they realized this was an important building. And it was all part of the synagogue there in Capernaum. There's no stone like this around Capernaum. So there was also some money involved in bringing this limestone from wherever, whatever the quarries were. I don't know if they determined where it came from, but they had to ship it in. So here's what it looks like when they rebuilt it from the parts that were lying around. And there's the way they think it looked. They think this was an open porch area, portico, whatever. And then this was a taller area because you got the columns to hold up another floor. So that's the idea. This is typical of a synagogue in Galilee. I don't know why. But they typically had three large doors. We're looking at it from the kind of the back. They had three large doors. You walk in from the front, three large doors. You're facing south. So if you walk in this way, you're facing south toward Jerusalem. And you have three large doors. Typically, there is some kind of a wall between the different sections of this room. Why would you need a wall in the room where everybody goes in to pray? Any ideas? Separate the men from the women. We could do that. We could put a wall down here and make the women on. They had all these rules. And one of them was you don't want the women to, the men shouldn't sit near somebody else's wife. It's a rule. You couldn't even remember we talked about the caravans that they would, when they go to the feast, that the men and the women were in a different part of the caravan so that a man wouldn't have to travel with another man's wife. And we thought that maybe that's why Jesus could go missing for a whole day and nobody noticed. Because his mom says, I thought he was with you. And dad says, I thought he was with you. And he realized he's not with either one of them. They had to go back and get him. Because they kept separate. He was about 12. And so he's about at the age where he's going to quit hanging out with his mom and his aunts, and he's going to start hanging out with his dad and his uncles. And they were confused, may have been confused, that maybe that year they thought he was going to be the time when he switched and wasn't with his mom anymore. Anyway, that's what you had to have. That's one of the reasons you had to have a wall in there. Keep the men on one side, the women on the other side. Now, this is not Capernaum. This is another place out in the middle of nowhere. Just last year, or 2 years ago, 2010, an excavating team included somebody from Duke and some others. They found the remains of a city, and they found this synagogue out in a foundation of what they think is a synagogue in this city up in the Galilee area. This is called Horvat Kur. I don't know exactly where that is. This is supposed to be the synagogue. Now, why did they start doing synagogues in the first place? When did that happen? See if any of your parents know. When did we start seeing synagogues historically? Moses had a synagogue? No.
The first mention of synagogues in the New Testament.
That's first mention. We don't see any mention. There's a possible, probably not. No mention of synagogues in the Old Testament. That's a very good point. Historians think that they started in the return from the exile around the time of Ezra. That since the temple had been destroyed, and then they started having weekly meetings at synagogues. I don't know. I didn't bring the evidence for that, but that's what the thought is. But there's no mention of it in the Bible. So here's a very small one out in some town in what now looks like a pretty desolate area of the Galilee. That would have been a synagogue. It didn't take too long before they were all over the place. Every little town had a synagogue, especially up in Galilee. But I didn't bring the statistics, but I read that in Jerusalem itself there were 480 synagogues. 480 synagogues. So they didn't let them get too big. Although, in some of the cities in the diaspora, where they went out, like Alexandria, sometimes they had huge synagogues. And there's a story, I didn't try to find out if it's true or not, there's a story that in Alexandria the synagogue was so large from front to back that in order to make sure everybody said amen at the same time, there was somebody in the middle who raised a flag. Because it was that far. It took so long. If you could say amen here, it took a long time until they heard it back there. So they raised a flag so everybody could say amen at the same time. That's what it said. Kind of like, remember the Feast of Tabernacles and some of those big buildings and the big tents? It was a long way from where the guy was waving his hands if you're in the back singing your song. But speed of light's really fast. Speed of sound's slow by comparison. So as long as you follow his arms, you were okay. This is Chorazin. It's another another town in the Galilee. This is the remains of a synagogue in Chorazin. And here you see those doors again. You see the ballast, you see the walls and that separate the people inside. They typically had the three hallways separated by the pillars. They had three doorways. The middle doorway was the largest. That would be this one. I think the other doorway is missing. You can see they got some capital thing here that would have been up here probably. So that's another example of a synagogue. Got the steps going up there to get to it. This is Chorazin again. See, they've got these things. These are in the inside of the building. It's a rectangular building. Came in, faced Jerusalem once you walked in. It was also built in such a way, and I never knew this before, was built in such a way to remind one of the temple. The temple had the Holy of Holies. What do you think? I never thought about this, so I got the answer before I had a chance to think about it. But I'll give you a chance to think about it. Temple had the Holy of Holies. What is it, and what did the Holy of Holies have in it? The Ark of Covenant, which had in it? You know, by Jesus' time, it would have just had the law, I guess, the scroll. They didn't have the manna and that stuff anymore, I don't think. They didn't have the Ark by that time either. You know. So, but the symbolism was that stuff was there. In the synagogue, what would they have there, perhaps, that would remind people of the Holy of Holies in the temple? I didn't have a chance to meditate on this and think about it. I saw the answer first. What might they have in a synagogue that would put you to mind of the Holy of Holies in the temple? The scrolls. And the scrolls were actually in a compartment with a curtain over it. So it's kind of like having the tablets in the Holy of Holies, in the Ark. They had scrolls. Back in those days, they didn't have books. Printing hadn't been invented. And if you wanted to read something, you read on a scroll, you unrolled it. And they were very expensive. You had to be either very rich or you had a synagogue, so you contributed money together, and then you bought some scrolls. Why did scrolls cost so much? You had to write it out very carefully. So, in this one special, I forget the name of it, it's probably got it in my notes, but that is one special place, had a curtain on front of it, and it had the scrolls inside there. And when you had your service, that's one of the things they would do. They'd bring those scrolls out and read them. We'll talk about that later, not right now. Well, I guess we can. Luke chapter 4. Luke chapter 4. In verse 16, or verse 14, I'll probably start. No. Well, he came back to Galilee in verse 14. He taught in their synagogues in Galilee. Not, you know, Galilee had lots of different synagogues, had lots of different towns. Jesus was from Galilee. Nazareth was a city, a small city or village in the Galilee, in the region of Galilee. And then he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and he stood up for to read. What was he reading? Did he pick up his Bible? No. They didn't have printing yet. It had been too expensive. And they didn't have what's called a codex. They didn't have where they put the ends of the pages together. They had a scroll. They brought him a scroll. The attendant, it says he gave the scroll back to the attendant. They had an attendant who brought him the scroll, rolled out to whatever was supposed to be read, perhaps, or maybe he chose it, but they had a scheduled reading, just like we do. It's the week to read 1 Timothy, right? Well, they had a week to read Isaiah, and he read from Isaiah. He read from the scroll. There are other things I might as well go through now. In the structure of a synagogue, they had an attendant who did things like hand out the scroll to be read. They had a chief of the synagogue, or whatever you want to call him, somebody who just kind of made things work smoothly. We'll look at that in the scripture later. Took care of whatever issues were. There was a platform. There was something like this in the synagogue where you could speak from. It had rulers of the synagogue, some leader of all. They had different elders. The people who were the elders were the heads of the families and so forth. And they chose from among themselves somebody to be the ruler, the chief one. That wouldn't necessarily always be the same person. It could go from different ones. Then you had somebody who was in charge of giving out the aid. People would contribute to a fund to help widows. You heard Dr. Johns read about widows indeed. There are some widows in the church needed to have help. And so there were people in charge of giving that. Did you want to say something? Yeah. I can't. What is
people in there?
Were there people in there? There would have been back then. I mean, it's all ruins now. But yes, they would have had people, all, especially on the Sabbath, they would come there. But they could also come during the week. If a big enough synagogue would have a school there, that would teach the boys. They didn't teach girls back then. Sorry. They would teach the boys how to read some Hebrew so they could read from the scroll. Because when they got to turn 12, 13, then they were counted as men, and then they could read. They could do the reading. And we read the scripture, right? That's what they did. And once you were 13, you could do that. Okay, there we go. There's a Torah scroll. See, they're wrapped up on these pieces of wood? And there's the Torah in there. And you just turn it. Every synagogue had a Torah scroll. And they kept it in a very special place. This one is from a synagogue in Budapest. Okay, in Europe. It's actually in a museum next to the synagogue now. It was built near the rear wall, covered by a veil. Okay, and it's kind of like the Holy of Holies. So it, even though they couldn't go to the temple, or even when this synagogue was built, there was no temple, but it could make you think about the temple. It put your mind on it a little bit so you could think in terms of where God was and think about God. Think about Jesus, like you all said. Think about the Bible. So having the Torah scroll there in a special place kind of made you feel like, oh, I can't be in Jerusalem, I can't be in the temple, but we got a little bit of the temple here in a way. We have this Torah scroll. You'd have to pay to get, because somebody would have to write this out. Scribes would have to write this out. It would take a long time. So you had to have a good bit of money in order to buy a Torah scroll for your temple, for your synagogue. And you didn't have a synagogue until you had how many men of means? 10. You had to have 10. I'm not sure where that number comes from. But if you didn't have some people with some money, you couldn't buy the Torah scroll. You couldn't build a synagogue. You know, there's a certain amount of just the practicality of having to have a certain amount of money to do this. All right. In Matthew 23, Jesus takes the Pharisees to task. By the way, I didn't go into this. I should have. Who ran the synagogues in general?
The Pharisees.
They ran the synagogues. Who ran the temple services in Jerusalem?
Sadducees.
The Sadducees were the kind of royalty. They were the people that were in the priests, people that were more Levitical. They were also very political. They were tied in with the Romans in a big way. And the average Jewish, middle class, poor, lower class, whatever person, they were kind of disgusted with the whole temple establishment, and they saw the Pharisees as a reasonable alternative. It's kind of like the next new great thing. We're going to vote for this guy, and Washington's going to get better, right? That's the way they felt about the Pharisees. That the Pharisees, even though they had their issues with the Pharisees too, but at least it seemed like they're going to, if we could just do things more like the Pharisees, we could clean up Jerusalem, just like we're going to clean up Washington. Well, the Pharisees weren't going to clean up Jerusalem, but that was the idea, that they paid more attention to the law, and they weren't as political and tied in with the Romans. Okay, Matthew 23, but the Pharisees had all kinds of problems. Matthew 23 is about that, where Jesus rakes them over the coals. I'm in the wrong chapter. Matthew 23, Jesus spoke to the multitude, and he said, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat." He didn't say the Sadducees. He said, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatsoever they tell you to do, do it. But just don't act like them." I paraphrase it a little bit. They sit in Moses' seat. Did Moses have a chair that he kind of left around and they found it? No. That's not what it means. It means there was a seat in the synagogue, maybe where the ruler of the synagogue sat. It was something that was kind of official, where there was some authority. And the person who sat in Moses' seat could make a rule, like no bare feet in church or something like that. I'm just making up something, okay? He could make that rule, and you had to do it. And Jesus said, he sits in Moses' seat. This is actually in the synagogue at Capernaum. They found these pieces of what they think is Moses' seat. This is the special seat that this person, this one of the elders, sat in that had the authority to make some rules. And Jesus said, they have the authority. You need to do what they say. Don't act like they act, because they do some things they shouldn't do, but they have authority, so you need to do what they say. If they say, you know, wear your tassel a little bit off to the left, wear it all, you know, whatever. I'm just making up something. They had the right to make rules about how to worship in the synagogue. So this is supposed to be Moses' seat. I don't know what it says on there, but the archaeologists have come to the conclusion that this is Moses' seat at Capernaum. This is that synagogue in Budapest I was telling you about, where that Torah scroll was. Now, you see, that almost looks like it has, you know, a steeple. The point about synagogue architecture is that it tends to look like whatever the buildings look like in that city. So if you're in a place that had like a kind of, like in Turkey or whatever, you get these little things going, whatever that's called. Anybody know what they are? I don't know. That kind of shape at the top of a tower. That's common architecture there. So you build a synagogue, it looked like that. If the synagogues in China look like pagodas, they got the roofs that do this. Okay, so there's no way they all look the same. They look like they belong in the city where they were built. Synagogues were like the temple in that it was an important place where you could go, talk about God, talk about the law, and also it would be school. They had school there, like I told you, if it was a big enough city, for instruction. And it also was a place where you coordinated the collections that were distributed to people in need, and had other, what you might call civic activities, activities of helping to take care of people. It was usually built, not, this is in Europe, but in Judea, it was usually built up on a hill. We just showed, well, here's this one here. This is on a little bit of a rise, not way up high, but it was on a high spot in the city. This in Chorazin, it's not the highest spot because it's higher behind there, but it's up on a hill. Yes. Onion dome. Thank you. Onion dome. That's a good description. That's just part of the typical architecture in Hungary there. The women, at least we know in later times, not Jesus' time, we're not sure. We're just guessing. But we know that later they sat in a separate section. And they weren't expected to take part. Be there and be quiet. You can read for yourself and come to conclusions in Timothy and Corinthians and so forth. There was apparently some role that women had in this congregation, in the Christian congregation, because Paul told them they needed to have their heads covered when they prayed and prophesied, so they were doing something that was somehow involved in the community. And he told them they needed to have their head covered, because otherwise people come in, it would look bad, because if you didn't have your head covered or your hair up in a bun or whatever, it meant something in that culture. It meant you were a loose woman, or else you were home with your husband. The only person you let your hair down for was your husband. So in the Christian church, the women were involved in the service in some way. And that was different than in the Jewish culture. And Paul, at least in Corinthians, he's saying, we don't want this to look bad. He's not saying to women, I don't want you to do anything. He's saying, when you do it, make sure you're dressed properly, make sure this, that, and the other, so we don't cause offense to people who walk in off the street and think you're all crazy or that you're doing something incorrect. You had to have a minimum of 10 males. Now, there are different parts of the service. I thought I was going to cover this later, so I think I will. It's also possible, you know, here we have, you know, I might speak, or Dr. Johns might speak, or somebody else might speak. In a synagogue, it wasn't always the same people. Somebody could come visit, and we'll see that a little later. Somebody could come visit from another town, and you say, well, do you have anything to say? Say, so be a visitor. When Mr. Buchanan first started coming, you know, he could speak. Now he comes all the time. He's one of the regulars. But, you know, maybe sometime we just have somebody like my brother come up, visit, speak. That's the way it was in the synagogue also. Gave him a chance. Jesus taught in their synagogues. Why? Because they asked him. He said, would you like to say something? Would you like to read? Would you like to teach? He had enough status in the community that he was allowed to do that. I think it seems that maybe any man that a reasonable, good reputation could do that. All right, we're back in Capernaum. This is that synagogue in Capernaum. And here's where the people would be. What do you notice? Well, this is a reconstruction, so you don't really know, but what's missing there? What's missing? And I'm telling you, it looked like this then, too. Yeah, what? Chairs. No chairs. And it's not just because they lost them over the last 2,000 years. There weren't any chairs in the beginning, in the first place. So if you went to the synagogue for service, and you thought the guy was going on too long, maybe you had good reason to think that. You were standing up. You're standing up for the whole time. I got another picture. There were benches along the side. I don't know who got to sit on the benches. Maybe the old people. I'm not sure. There were benches. Maybe it's important people. There were some seats at some place. Is it in Matthew 23 where Jesus said that the leaders, the Pharisees, where they wanted the chief seats? There were some seats like this one, like that one, and some other ones where the important people sat, or people who thought they were important. So there were some seats, but that meant you were a special person. It meant you were a somebody that had to be listened to. And that's why men wanted to sit there, so they could be thought to be important. And Jesus said, you don't need that. So I don't know who sat in the benches on the side. Not sure. But generally, yeah, you had to stand up. That's what it looked like before they started putting the pieces together. So here's what it looks like now. But when they first decided, let's see what we can do here, that's what it looked like. But see, some of it was pretty fancy. This isn't part of somebody's house. See the complicated stuff there at the top of the column? And see, there's some carvings in that. So they knew it was an important building. Turns out it's a synagogue. Here's those steps that we saw in the other picture. So it's kind of like having your blocks out, right? You get your blocks out when you're little, you play with your blocks, and you got these blocks. And then the archaeologist comes and says, how are these supposed to go together? Yes? I'm sorry, Kate. Yeah, I don't know how it fell down. Could have been an earthquake. Could have just been over time. Could have been army came. I don't really know. Nobody wrote about it. I don't know what the history is. But it fell down, and so they rebuilt it. They built parts of it from the pieces that are there. Why aren't all the pieces there? Well, because, so you're building a house, you're building something nearby, you're going to come take some. Oh, this looks like pretty good stuff. I can use it. You don't take the pieces that are all broken, but maybe you got some pieces that aren't all broken up, and you take them to build something else. That's why it's so hard to put some things together for archaeologists, because a lot of the pieces are missing, because you take them and use them somewhere else over the last 2,000 years or 3,000 years or 4,000 years, whatever it is. So that's what it looked like in the early 1900s, I think. How fancy it was inside depended on how much money the people had. You know, if you had a rich congregation, you had a nicer place. Basically how it was. You might have lamps, benches, seats. If you had a really rich congregation, maybe you had seats to sit in. You didn't have to stand up. Oh, here you go. Here's a close-up of the bench along the side. That doesn't look all that comfortable, does it? But it's better than maybe standing. Kind of like sitting at the bleachers at a ball game. Who's in the synagogue? Who did you have? Well, let's turn to Mark chapter 5. Who ran things? Mark chapter 5, verse 22. This is a scripture about somebody called Jairus. And his daughter was sick, and Jesus healed his daughter. But here's what they call him here. Mark, when he writes the gospel here, he says, there came one of the rulers of the synagogue. So Jairus was a boss. Jairus, I think is how it's said. He was he was the head of the synagogue. He's the one who sat in Moses' seat. I don't know But he was one of the leading people in the synagogue. He was humble. He came to Jesus and asked Jesus to help him. So that was nice. In Luke chapter 13. I was trying to give you some background. So you go through the New Testament, you read these scriptures, and you think, well, who are they talking about? What's the context of all this? In Luke chapter 13 and verse 14, it says, the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation. This is the guy who was upset because Jesus healed somebody on the Sabbath day. So who was the one that made the big deal about it? It was the ruler of the synagogue. Oh, there's six other days when you could heal. Well, he was the boss man in the synagogue. He was the one that the people respected. And that head of the synagogue also had another job. In Acts chapter 13 and verse 15. Acts chapter 13 and verse 15. This is Paul. And I think now he's in Antioch. Or Perga, I'm not sure. No, they came to Antioch in Pisidia. And he went into the synagogue, Acts chapter 13 and verse 14, on the Sabbath day, and he sat down. And after the reading of the law and the prophets, we'll talk about that in a minute, after they read, we have a scripture reading, right? After the scripture reading, the rulers of the synagogue said to them, saying, you men and brethren, if you have any word of exhortation for the people, say on. So, was it Paul and Barnabas? I didn't pay attention. Paul and his company. When Paul and all of his friends came into the synagogue in Antioch, they knew he was a visitor. And they said, do you have anything you'd like to say? And you like to, you know, we just read the law and the prophets. We just read the scripture. Would you like to comment on what was read? Do you have anything you'd like to say? Can you tell us, you know, something from your part of the world? Whatever. They had a chance to talk. But it was the ruler of the synagogue. It was the rulers of the synagogue. The men who were in charge who had the authority to say, you can speak. And that's what gave Paul a chance to spread the gospel. Why is that? Because Paul went around where there were already synagogues in Europe and in Asia. There were already synagogues there where Jewish people were worshiping. On the Sabbath, Paul and his people that were with him went into the synagogue, and then because it was a common courtesy, the head of the synagogue, the ruler of the synagogue, would say, do you have anything you'd like to say? And Paul would say, you bet I do. Well, something like that. He'd say, and he'd start preaching about Jesus. They tell him that the Messiah, all the Jewish people were looking for a Messiah. They didn't realize he had already come and been killed and resurrected. And that's what Paul told them. Where did he do that? He did it in the synagogues. That's what Acts tells us anyway. He went from this synagogue to that synagogue. And after a week or two, the people didn't like the message anymore and they kick him out and say, you can't come back to the synagogue anymore. But then other people, mostly Gentiles, would say, we want to hear more about this. Come talk to us. And they'd have to go somewhere else outside the synagogue. Maybe down by the river, maybe in the park, maybe somebody's house. So the next Sabbath, Paul would talk to them somewhere else after he got kicked out of the synagogue. But he would start in the synagogue. And the scriptures say, to the Jew first and then the Greek. So God was giving the Jew the first opportunity to hear the gospel. And they rejected it, and Paul turned to the Gentiles. But it was the structure, what made it all possible was that there were synagogues all around the Roman world. There were synagogues in Rome. There were synagogues in Antioch. There was a synagogue in Philadelphia and Smyrna and Pergamum. Everywhere you go, Jews had spread out all over the place and there were synagogues. So when Paul showed up in that town, he could go to the synagogue and preach. There was a place for him to preach. And that's how the gospel spread from Jerusalem. It was from Paul and others going into the synagogues and talking to them. So that's important. It's not just we got synagogues, but it was important to the whole spread of the gospel. This is the inside of a particular synagogue in Britain. I forget where. Essex, I think. So you got kind of a Gothic design. So, you know, depends on whatever the mode was at the time, the style. Almost done here. I want to talk just a little bit. What did they do in their synagogue service? When Jesus went to the synagogue with his parents on a Sabbath, what did he watch? What did he see? What do you think they did Yes, they talked about God. Yes, they talked about Jesus. Yes, they talked about the Bible. They read from the Bible. What does it, do you know specifically what they did? We've talked about some of the things. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. They always read this, and this is what started the service. And they had some other scriptures they read at the beginning too. But this is the first one. Probably still that way. I don't know. I've never been to a synagogue. Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Gary could say it in Hebrew. Tell him he can. If he's there. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. One Lord, says the King James. And you shall know the Lord your God. I'm sorry, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up, and you shall bind them to be a sign upon your hand and upon the frontlets, and be frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on the posts of your house and on your gates. That's the first thing they read. Then they read some other ones, which I'm not going to read. They read some other scriptures. What do? We read scriptures. So we try to follow that a little bit. They have prayer. Now, in a synagogue service, they have long prayers. And they have some of them the same prayers that they pray week in and week out. So that's different. We don't do that. But they did. And there's nothing wrong with that. We could do it too, but we don't. They read from the law. That means they read from Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. They read something from those five books. And then after they read that, they read something from the prophets, like Isaiah and Jeremiah, or the Psalms. They read something from something from other place. Then they had a chance for somebody to speak, just like when Paul was there in Antioch. He said, all right, do you have anything you want to say? We've already read from the Bible. Now we can have a message. Somebody can get up and talk about the Bible. Talk about God. And when it was all over, they had something called a blessing or a benediction. And if they had a real priest there, the priest could give the blessing. If they didn't have a priest, somebody had to just read it. And that's what they did every week. Now, I went over that real quickly, and I didn't want to spend a lot more time on it. It doesn't say anything about singing or dancing or playing instruments, celebrating, having a nice meal. It doesn't seem that they did that kind of thing. Seemed kind of, I don't know how to describe the service. It was fairly serious. It got the job done. Utilitarian, right? They did what they had to do. The Bible doesn't spell out in the Old Testament or in the New Testament, everything you're supposed to do at a synagogue service or a church service. Yes?
So why do we do that now?
Why what?
Why do we do that now?
Oh, well, if you're there tomorrow, you'll hear more about that. It's the Bible doesn't tell us what to do or what not to do in terms of how to have a service. The Bible, in the Psalms especially, the Psalms are songs. They're words to songs that were sung in the temple, especially on holy days, but also all the days. So, to give you an advanced answer, what we do today, not just in this church, but lots of churches, is kind of a combination of what they did in the temple and what they did in the synagogue. A little bit of a mix of both. The synagogue service seems to me, I'm not an expert on this, as I was reading through it, it seems to me to be focused on the law, focused on the do's and the don'ts, just the way the Jews were. And I'd say, for those of us in our tradition, we followed that pretty faithfully too, didn't we? We focus on the law. That's not necessarily wrong. Depends on as long as you don't get out of balance. Very traditional. I would say again that from everything I've read, the traditional synagogue service was not very exciting. You weren't leaping for joy. I'm not saying that's wrong or right. That's not my point. Just showing that it was different. It was different. They didn't have a song service. They didn't do certain things. Some of the things they did, very good. But they didn't do everything that we do. They didn't do everything that they did at the temple. You couldn't have sacrifices in a synagogue. because they were only allowed to be sacrifices at the temple. But when you went to the temple for the feast, that was a time to celebrate. And that was very different. And I'm going to talk about this tomorrow if you're there. You'll get to hear it. It was a very different atmosphere at the temple. And I'm not going to give any prescribed advice of what I think ought to be or ought not to be. I'm just going to point out the difference between what happened on every Sabbath and what happened when they went to festivals. And just lay it out there, because I think it's very interesting. And I've been thinking a lot more about the feasts and the festivals and what made them different and what made them special and how exciting they were and why. And I think there's something we can learn from that. And I don't know that we have to always wait for the feast for those things either. That's another issue. But they were special. When they went to the feast, just to give a little bit of a foretaste here, remember we were talking about how poor people were back in the time of Jesus? And what did they have to eat usually? Hamburgers? No. What did they have?
Bread.
They had bread at every meal, and they dipped up some kind of stew, veggies or whatever. At the feast, though, what did they have? Meat. No, they took the meat with them. They weren't taking the sheep just to keep them company. Why were they taking sheep to the feast? Steaks. Right? Stew, whatever. There's some more, right? This is an accurate picture. You took your food. And it was easier to walk them there and then kill them than it was to kill them and then try to carry them while they're dead. So you'll make them walk. That was part of your tithe that you took to the feast. You got to eat it. You got to sacrifice it at the temple, but you gave the kind of a sacrifice, not a burnt offering where it was all burnt up, but you give a what's called a peace offering or a special festival offerings. You got to offer it. Certain things, some parts of the kidney and different parts were burned on the altar. And the rest of it, you shared with the priest, you shared with the poor people, you shared with your family. There was lots of meat to go around. Everybody had a great time because they had steak every day, every meal. It was really good. They had lots of good things to drink, lots of good things to eat. It was really, really special. Because they were very, very poor and they lived like kings on the holy days. Live like kings. They lived like kings on the Sabbath, too, in another way. Which we don't... I don't know if we've talked about that. Some people were jealous of the Jewish people because of something they didn't do on the Sabbath. What didn't they do on the Sabbath? Work. And in the rest of the Roman Empire, everybody had to work. Slaves had to work. Everybody had to work. So for a whole group of people to have off on the Sabbath made them very, very special and very advanced, if you want to put it that way, as a people. They were enlightened in a way. God was giving even the slaves that day off. So to get... us adults here, the idea that the Sabbath is bondage, it's exactly the opposite. In a world where everybody lived in bondage and everybody was extremely poor, God gave the Sabbath and told His people, you get a day off. I don't care if the whole rest of the world's working. I don't care if you're a slave, you get the day off. That was revolutionary. And people didn't like it. But to call it bondage, it's so twisted because it's exactly the opposite. It was the opposite of bondage. It's just amazing. That's one of the reasons James calls God's law a law of liberty. It's a law of freedom. It's a law that says you can't work on Saturday. Whoa, what a good law. I like that law. All right, got off subject here. Feast time, Ezra. You're reading the law to the people, all these people in the temple. It was an exciting time. It was an exciting time. He's reading. These people are either trying to keep everybody quiet or maybe they're translating into another language. I don't know. But the temple service was very different. We'll talk about that tomorrow. I don't want to talk about it much today. This is not a picture of the temple. This is a Feast of Tabernacles that goes on today somewhere in the world. I don't remember where this picture was taken. But there's dancing. There's music. There's all, there's a celebration because there are things to celebrate. And the festivals are a time for celebrating. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But I wanted to give you the background as to what's different about every week, week in, week out, and you understand this, and you understand how a synagogue service was, now tomorrow you'll get to see how special the festival services are.